This is an interview with Silverchair's vocalist, songwriter and guitarist, Daniel Johns. Daniel, was it a difficult process naming this new album?
I just wanted an album title which encapsulated what the album was about lyrically and musically, about taking someone to another place and about having that sense of escapism. And we'd gone over multiple titles throughout the whole recording and pre-production and mixing process. Someone just said, what about Diorama? And it just felt right.
How is Diorama different to Silverchair's previous three albums?
This is the first album I've written where I haven't been a teenager. I just think the more you live, the more you're open to looking at things from different perspectives. I had some time off after the last album. I started to get my head together and think what I wanted to do musically had a really powerful effect over how I was feeling mentally as well.
How would you describe the atmosphere or the attitude of Diorama?
I'd describe it like just grabbing handfuls of paint and throwing it at a canvas. It's like a collage of melody.
Your vocal expression on this album is much more diverse than your previous albums. Was that an agenda from the very beginning?
I think vocally on this album, I just really focused on singing how I'd sing if no one was in the room, like how I sing in my house when I'm writing. With the last album, I was really sick, so I was singing, and I think you could hear the frailty in my voice at the time. This time around, I was feeling a lot more healthy and a lot stronger, and I think vocally you can hear that.
The band rehearsed for over 6 months before starting to record this album, which is a much longer rehearsal period than Silverchair has had in the past. Why was that?
Well, I was aware of the complexity of the songs and aware of the fact that it might take a little longer to get them together as a band. In order to pull this kind of record off, it has to be coming second nature to you and it has to feel natural. And the only way it's going to feel natural is if you're totally not thinking about what bit is coming next and what part is coming next. It's just got to come naturally to you.
The band recorded your previous two albums with Nick Launay. How was it working with producer David Bottrell for the first time?
I think working with David was different just because there needed to be a sense of nervousness and slight discomfort, which would only have been brought about through having a new person there and someone you needed to trust them, but you also needed to be slightly unaware of how they would react to things. I think if I'm in control of when things are going to be done, they always take too long and I'm just really kind of, yeah, we'll try this and try this. And Dave was like, no, we've got an hour, we do this now. And I was like, yeah, all right.
How did you come to work with music legend and Beach Boys collaborator Van Dyke Parks on this record?
Van Dyke Parks came about through conversations I'd had with a manager. I was describing to him the kind of arrangements that I wanted. He was aware of the over-the-top opulent nature of the tracks and he said to me, what about Van Dyke Parks? After I'd talked to him on the phone, I just knew it was the right person. I just knew straight away as soon as we were talking that he was on the same wavelength and it was going to be really good.
This is an interview with Silverchair drummer Ben Gillies. Ben, when did you first hear the demos for Diorama?
Daniel actually called me up one day and we were hanging out quite a bit then. And he said, oh, come up, mate, and we'll just hang out and I'll show you the new stuff. I heard them all, you know, two or three times before they actually really sunk in. But once we started rehearsing them with Chris, they all came pretty naturally, like they were Silverchair songs. I mean, Daniel wrote them and they're Daniel John songs, but, you know, they evolved into the band sound.
Do you have a favourite song on the album?
World Upon Your Shoulders is definitely a stick-out one for me. I really enjoy playing it. Just the groove, it's just got a great groove and it just chugs along, but it's just nice. It pulls you into this place and you just can't get out of there. You have to hear the whole thing.
Which of the new songs do you think has the most hit potential?
I remember turning to Daniel after Love Your Life played and saying to him that Watto, our manager, I said, Watto's going to like that one. I just picked that one straight up as the hit. I think it's a radio-friendly song, but it's like it doesn't take away from the music. Like, it's still a really, really good song.
What do you think is different about this album as compared to your previous three albums?
The whole album, I think it appeals to a much broader age group than we have in the past. it appeals to the younger generation, teenagers and stuff, but also I think it appeals to, like, you know, 20, 30, 40, even 50-year-olds. Like, it just kind of opened up this whole new audience.
Did you have to play drums differently on this album to accommodate the more varied, complex nature of the songs?
I had to completely reinvent my style for the new album. I listened to a lot of James Brown, a lot of funk music, and that really helped me get into the swing, I guess you could say. In the past, on our other albums, it's been really rock-like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, start, and then I'll see you at the end kind of thing.
What was it like working in the studio with someone like Van Dyke Parks, who has worked with U2 and the Beach Boys?
Working with Van Dyke was definitely an experience that I'll never forget. He's just such an intelligent, amazing person to be around. It was just like this little family in the studio, and it was to go in there every day and work with these people that everyone got along really well, and to be working with great songs. It was just such a good feeling to wake up in the morning and know you're going to be part of a pretty amazing experience.
Were there any standout studio highlights for you personally?
The best feeling is when you walk into the control room and you hear the song for the first time when it comes through the speakers. That's why I'm in a band, and that's why I rehearse, and that's why I practice so much, so you can create this sound, this piece of music that, you know, is kind of set in stone throughout time.
Do you think that you or any of the band members have changed as people as a result of this amazing journey you've all been on as Silverchair?
I think as people, the three of us are pretty much the same people as we would have been if we weren't in the band. The biggest mistake that I think a lot of people in bands make is thinking that they're better than anybody else just because of who they are. I always just think about my friends and my family and where I live, and it just brings you back to earth, really. Everyone's human and everyone just wants to be happy. So that's the main aim, just be happy and have fun with it.
This is an interview with a Silverchair bass player, Chris Joannou. Chris, do you have a favourite song on Diorama?
I haven't settled into a favourite yet. I mean, they're all faves because they're still so new and fresh, you know, that you just love playing them all. There's not one that you would prefer to play over the other, which is kind of a good feeling.
Did you have to adjust your playing style for the songs on this new album?
A lot of things with my style and sound even changed on this new record. The feel of the songs were different. They weren't just like straight 4-4 grooves, which were just trying to lock in with the kick and all that sort of stuff and get the job done. It was more involved than that, just trying to, you know, it was a different kind of swing, or it was Ben to be playing some crazy 4-4 and Daniel have us on a 3-4, and it was just like, oh my God. I'd been, you know, sitting on the same kind of style for ages, so it was good for me to have, you know, that kind of challenge.
How was it working with a music legend like Van Dyke Parks, who has previously worked with bands like the Beach Boys and U2?
Van Dyke Parks first got thrown around in the early days of putting this all together, but someone mentioned that he wasn't alive anymore. And so I was like, oh, let's not worry about that. And then someone else said, yes, he is, and we didn't know what to think. And finally we got in contact with him, and I remember first meeting him, and he was just this outrageous little man that was just totally into it and having such a great time. And Van Dyke Parks was constantly saying stuff to Daniel and just saying, wow, man, you're amazing, and I suppose that's flattering from a guy like that. Daniel would have got some great kicks out of that.
Were there any special highlights for you personally during the recording of Diorama?
Once all the extra instruments started going on top in the studio, I actually sat in behind the orchestra in the live room, and it was just amazing. You know, Van Dyke Parks was up there conducting, and I was just sitting behind the double bass players. It was such a great feeling to actually hear it without the music, just like a symphony playing basically, and then going back in the room 5 minutes later and hearing it all together with the band was unreal.
Are you looking forward to getting back out onto the road with this new album?
There's going to be a hell of a lot in store for the next 12 months, I'm sure. You know, it's going to be hard work again because it's been so long since we've done a grueling tour schedule. But, you know, we're all looking forward to it, and just to get out there and play some dates would be great.
This is a track by track of Silverchair's fourth studio album, Diorama, by songwriter Daniel Johns. The Greatest View, track 2. Daniel, how did The Greatest View evolve lyrically?
With The Greatest View, it was just like 10 minutes and the lyrics were done, and I was really happy with them, and I didn't want to change it because there's an honesty which comes with writing a song that quickly. A lot of the times the words come with the melody, like it's like someone's handing it to you and all you've got to do is be in the right place and just grab it.
Across the Night, track one. Across the Night is such a different sounding Silverchair song. What kind of mood were you in when you wrote it?
Across the Night was written at a point where I wasn't sleeping very well. It was a full moon and I felt like the moon was stealing my sleep because it was too powerful and it was really affecting me. And then I thought, oh, why don't I just write a song that sounds like a Hollywood musical? And I'll write it about this moon stealing my slumber. And I just sat in my house over a night from about 11 o'clock one night till about 7 in the morning. I just wrote that song and then I was really tired and I went to bed.
Did you always want Across the Night to be the first track on the album?
As soon as I wrote it, I knew it had to be track one. It's the perfect entry into Diorama. I think it takes you to a different world and prepares you for what's to come.
Without You, track three. At what stage of the writing process did you write Without You?
Without You was the first song written for this album, and it was originally written around the time of Neon Ballroom, but I came back to it later when I was writing Diorama and saw that it could really fit on the record. It's got elements of what Silverchair were and what Silverchair have become all in one track.
You brighten my life like a polystyrene hat is quite an unusual lyric. What made you come up with that?
When you're given a polystyrene hat at a children's birthday party, you're happy for like 3 seconds because you got this new hat and then you realise it's just polystyrene and put it back and it's really short term.
One-Way Mule and Lever, tracks 5 and 9. How would you musically compare songs like One-Way Mule and Lever with the other songs on Diorama?
With One-Way Mule and Lever, they were both the songs for people who have always been into that groove, heavier aspect of what we did. Sometimes I just want to just write rock songs and not worry about having to do anything particularly different and do anything that's going to stimulate me. I just want to play something which I would have loved when I was 12 years old and stood in front of the mirror with a tennis racket and played the riff and thought, this just can't get any better. The same feeling that I felt when I first heard Deep Purple or Black Sabbath. They're the kind of feelings that I want people to get when they hear songs like One Way Mule and Lever. Just things that make you want to jump around your room and be crazy and have fun.
Tuna in the Brine, track 6. Tuna in the Brine is probably the weirdest and most explorative song on the album. I mean, have you got a thing for tuna?
The song's about exposing yourself and allowing yourself to shine. So I was trying to think of a suitable metaphor and I was just sitting back thinking of what's really shiny and what is really well lubricated and looks really nice and packaged. Then I remembered opening a tuna can when I was little and being fascinated by how shiny the tuna were. Although I'm really serious about that song and that's the song I'm most proud of on the record, there's also an element of humour in that song which I haven't really explored before. There are times where I know it's ridiculous but I wanted to do it because it appealed to me. It's more an introduction to what I want to be doing in 10 years' time.
Love Your Life, track 8. Love Your Life is probably the closest thing to a pop song you've ever written. How did it come about?
I was just sitting at my piano one night and before I know it, Love Your Life was a song and it's not like I sat down and said, I'm going to try and write something which is more poppy and melodic and sweet than I've ever written. It just came out and I sat back and listened to that song after I wrote it and couldn't believe that I just wrote it. In a way, I was really proud that I'd stretched that far, that I'd confused myself. But in another way, I was wondering whether I should go any further with it because it just seems so poppy to me.
What's the meaning behind the lyric, You Don't Know the Truth and I Love Your Life?
The You Don't Know the Truth and I Love Your Life lyric came about. It was actually after a therapy session I'd had. I was just discussing it with the therapist. It sounds so ridiculous, but I was discussing people who I thought were so unaware of the world and how things are working that they're so happy. I think people that are unaware of the truth sometimes can be happier.
My Favourite Thing, track 10. My Favourite Thing sounds sweet and haunting at the same time. What's it about?
It was about exploring that notion that death and love can be romantic. I guess I've just always had an obsession with love and an obsession with death, so I combined the two, and that's what came out. I don't know, I must have lit red candles that night or something.
After All These Years, track 11. The last track on the album sounds reflective and hopeful. Is it the light at the end of the tunnel?
Yeah, I think After All These Years, it's the perfect closer to the record because it lands you somewhere peaceful and comfortable and tranquil. And if you look at the album as a journey, everything is strategically placed to make you feel like you've just been somewhere magical, and you end up at a place where you would never expect to end up on a Silverchair record. And I think that can only be a good thing.